Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 64 of Forever Strength. I'm Andrew Coates, I've got Bailey Lau with me, and today we've got a cool guest. We've been bringing our members on and talk about their experiences, and we also have had a lot of coaches. My friend Lavanya Krishnan is both. So she's been doing our program, has been loving it, but you are yourself, you actually work in public health. So you're very, very, you know, accomplished in the medical side of everything, but you also work as a personal trainer. You work with a lot of people, primarily women over the age of 65. And you and I actually met for the first time. We both were speakers at the same event, our friend Tim Art's Inland Empire Fitness Conference. That was the 2022 edition, because you had been mentored by my good friend Chad Landers for some time, I think. And Chad is a wonderful human being. So that's how we know each other. And then you turn around, and one of Bailey and I, one of our favorite parts of this program is how, listen, coaches, we don't always put ourselves first. We take care of our clients. And we actually have a lot of trainers in the program because it like takes a lot of the decision-making away. So we're thrilled you're here. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. It's really nice to be here.
Awesome.
Well, same old question first. How did you get into fitness?
How did I get into fitness? You know what? This is actually really a poignant moment. It was grade 10 high school. I had Mrs. Humphreys was my gym teacher. And one day she took us into the weight room at school. And it was all like Cybex machines. And we had a course on like strength training. And we had to, you know, do the circuit and answer questions at the end of the term. And I kind of fell in love with it because I liked the machines. It was all machine based. And the muscle stuff, it just really excited me. So I think that was the turning point for me. I really started being curious about it back in high school. And then I picked it up again when around like 18 or 19, because I used to go to the gym and take these community classes, you know, like step classes and stuff back then, but really strength training, but 18 or 19 years old in college.
Yeah. And so then did that influence the education that you continued to go through after high school?
It did. I was doing my undergrad in biology because I wanted to go into medical school. But then after undergrad, I really sort of started leaning towards exercise physiology. I loved the whole healthy body, healthy life, because you only have this one body. And if you can't treat that right, everything else in life, might not fall like you want it to fall. So I was lucky enough to pursue like exercise physiology for my master's at University of Buffalo. And at the same time, I was working at the gym, Buffalo Athletic Club. So it kind of fed into each other.
Yeah. We've had a few coaches on here where they're going through and sort of being a personal trainer is a side gig, and it goes along well with still being in school because you can decide what hours you work. Is that sort of one of the reasons that you went into that as well?
Yeah. And the other reason actually was because I moved from Ontario to the US, and being on like a student visa, you have to work 20 hours and that's all you can work outside of school. And so where I wanted to work was the gym. Because it was supplementing, you know, my education at the same time. And I just fell in love with it at that point. And I said, you know, I'm doing all this stuff in person at the gym. And, you know, and I was training clients. I'd be like, okay, this muscle and that muscle. And in school, I'm learning anatomy and physiology. So it kind of all just blended together. And I really had a great time. The timings, flexible schedules. I just kind of really loved it.
Yeah. And going through school and then also applying the stuff that you had, I'm sure sort of just solidified all of that information that you were getting in theory and then putting it into practice.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
So tell us a little bit more about, Andrew mentioned the sort of demographic that you work with, but why you decided to go into working with them in the public health.
So when I was working at the gym, we had some other trainers and a lot of women. It was a women's gym. Buffalo Athletic Club has like women's and it had co-ed gyms as well. And a lot of women would come in and they would take a lot of the cardio classes and some of the strength training classes. We had small group classes and I used to teach just a couple of group classes, but I was sort of a stickler for form. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, nobody was getting hurt and they were going through the motions using strength versus momentum, because we see that often in public gyms or in these classes. So I think word might have just gotten out that the classes, people were getting something out of it. So I would draw women who were older, who wanted to feel safe in a class and be looked after instead of just going to these classes and somehow maybe getting hurt and not knowing what they were doing. So I was slower and more intentional. So I think that kind of just, they just gravitated. And I not capitalized on that, but I really liked the fact that I was helping somebody feel good after their workout. And it didn't have to be this elitist thing to work out. It didn't have to be something you're just going through the motions, but you are getting something out of it. You are getting stronger. And it's not something with a fixed end date. You know, there's no 30 days to success, 6-week program, you know, no restriction. I wasn't talking about, you know, binge diet, none of that stuff. It was just pure strength and taking it at your own pace. So I just ended up in with that demographic, and I just built a clientele around it. And I was very happy to take on some of these clients. Absolutely.
Let's just talk about the pure pragmatism here for a second. Like traders, it's a bit cliche, but traders come in, they want to work at athletes sometimes, blah, blah, blah. It's like, there ain't much money in athletes outside of like very high level. And if you're coming in first, you're not getting high level athletes. It's just not going to happen. But who needs to get stronger more than anybody else? Older adults, especially the generation of older adults that didn't necessarily get pushed to or encouraged or had the access, the knowledge, the way that maybe is more common now, right? That generation. And practically speaking, who on average has the financial resources to hire a personal trainer? So personal trainers are literally nuts if they don't embrace catering to older adults. Like Bailey, Ron is 89, is he not?
He'll be 87 in December.
87, right? So her oldest client's 87. He's sweet. And she got another. How old is Ed?
Ed is 73.
I've got two 73-year-olds, and I'm about to start another one around the same age. And they're actually a joy to work with, right? Like anybody who sees Larry on my media, Larry's a ball of fun. And I just think that this is actually a really smart strategy. You know, trainers, you know, and this is not really a show for trainers as much, but trainers like are worried about whether, you know, their income's going to be, you know, getting clients, what have you. Like if you want to turn over younger people who will come with you for a little period of time, I think that's actually a wonderful thing to teach from the ground up. But my older clients, they're not, they want to learn for sure, but they're really not worried about learning total independence. They come for the experience. They want to feel safe. And I still think that strength training is literally the safest thing you can possibly do when it comes to physical activity. But they come for the experience. They like having that relationship. And you get clients like that, and they tend to be very consistent, very long-term clients, which is an amazing foundation for your career, which then allows you to work with lots of other populations.
Oh, absolutely. Some of my clients have been with me for over 10, 12 years. Quite a few, because I met them in 2007, 2008, when I was starting out there, and they just kind of stayed. Sometimes they would go away for a period of time, you know, family commitments, grandchildren, they would come right back, and they would tell their friends, and they would tell their friends. And then I have two clients who were working independently of each other, and then they were following each other. So one would be at 10 a.m. and then at 10:30 at the gym. And then they're like, well, why don't we work out together? Because they liked that social time for them. And, you know, so they've been friends now for 15 years, and they still train with me together, you know. And yeah, life happens, but they're always kind of, they're consistent. Nothing fancy, no standing upside down on a BOSU ball on your pinky finger, none of that stuff. But solid strength training. And I love hearing stories. Like one of my clients today said, she went to the doctor and he said her heart's never been in better health, and her, you know, her bone density is good. And she's like 77, you know, to get, those are the things that matter to me. And I'm so glad for them. I'm so happy that they can live their lives being so strong, because when you get to be that strong and consistent with working out, you don't realize that for the mass, for the bigger population, it's not the norm. Most people don't work out. Most people feel their age because they're not able to exercise for whatever reason. Multiple things in life happen. And, you know, your post today, Andrew, about, you know, there's a person out there who is not able to do what you're able to do. And you have the ability to go to a gym and you have that membership, go use it. Because sometimes people have to choose between rent and working out. It's the reality. But if you're able to do it,
yeah, then do it for sure. Yeah, actually, the gym that I go to that's closer to my house, not Evolve, there is a women's section upstairs, and there's this group of older women. They've got to be in their 60s, late 60s, They come in at 9 o'clock. They're such nice women too. They say good morning to me every morning. So the first one there cleans all the machines that are up there. They go around in their circle. They're social. There's usually about 4 to 7 of them. And they are there Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9 a.m. for sure. And it's awesome to see, whether it be, you know, they're just more comfortable with machines or they've never cared to learn about lifting weights. Do you find that because there was less push for that generation to be lifting weights, so the education is more important to them, or they're just there to learn from you, or how does that go for you?
That's a good question. I think that because the push was so less compared to this generation, now, you know, working out is so normalized, mm-hmm. they're eager and they want to learn. You know, they want to know what muscles they're working out. You know, to this day, they'll be like, so the triceps are like these ones, right? The ones that like help me. I'm like, yes, yes. You know, you've been with me for so long, but sometimes they don't really care. They just want to get stronger. But some mm-hmm. of them, it depends on who you're talking to, want to know what they're doing, you know, and they want to know, you know, one of my clients, for example, she walks up and down stairs a lot and she says, my quads have gotten stronger. 5 years ago, I didn't even know what quads were. So, you know, sometimes when I tell her, you know, engage, brace, you know, imagine yourself lifting groceries up a flight of stairs, they're able to sort of make that link and squeeze the muscle or, you know, just focus, stay a bit more focused. Something that helps in some ways.
Yeah. I find with the older population that I work with, the cues are different. And I think it's because they've been moving their body their whole life, not knowing what engage your core means. They don't know what a hip hinge is. They don't understand those sort of movement terms. So you're sort of talking to them a little bit different. Do you find the same thing?
Yes. And I think it's always important to meet people where they are, because these are just terms. If someone can relate to a different term and get the same cue and turn that into action, then why wouldn't we do that? I think that's just part of being considerate and sort of an empathetic coach, because you don't yeah. want to make someone feel like you don't want to make someone feel stupid or dumb for not knowing what we're talking about. That's not even the point of it. So if you can meet people where they are, I think that's great for them.
Yeah.
There's actually something even deeper to this. I think that everybody, any age, we should actually be really conscientious of this. I don't know if either of you have read Nick Winkelmann's book, The Language of Coaching. Really cool book. Gets very neuroscience heavy early, like challenging stuff. But then he goes into, and there's a ton of research on this, the difference between creating an internal cue, so referencing particular muscle or joint, versus an external cue, which might be, a really good example is, let's say we've got someone doing a hip thrust and you tell them, you know, squeeze their glutes, okay? And you're getting this internal focus. But actually what works, and there's research that explains this, is I like to say, smash your hip bones to the ceiling, something like that, right? Hips to the sky. And what happens is the body and the brain actually processes the external cue faster, which there's less thinking, there's less internalizing, there's less pondering it. The synapse, like muscle fiber recruitment, is faster, which actually allows people greater force output. And it's actually easier for them to learn this. So there is actually there's research that validates exactly what you just described. And it's really cool. I think any trader should read this book. But end of the day, I actually think that use of analogy and use of external cue language, and again, I don't want to get too complicated with this, is actually one of the best ways that trainers can approach any of this stuff. And if you, the enthusiast, are trying to learn these things, sometimes it's actually easier to focus on anchoring your movement to something external from you than it is to focus, like put your mind deep in the muscle. In the bodybuilding world, used to train us to, you got to put your brain in, you put your mind in your bicep, you got to think. That actually is kind of counterintuitive. It's not that it's useless, but it's not necessarily the best route most of the time.
Yeah, I think and the general population too.
I was just going to add to that, you know, if you've never squeezed a muscle or worked on that kind of, if you don't have a background in it sometimes, like bodybuilders do, for the person taking a group class, you know, lifting weights, put your mind into your muscle. And some of these older women, they're like, what does putting mind into a muscle mean? And then here you are trying to explain that phrase. And then you realize you're like, actually, I don't know how to explain that to you. I just know the feeling. So external cues are wonderful. I think they're great.
Yeah. And so just to shift things, I guess, a little bit, in terms of your training, you mentioned that you started out doing classes in a rec center. What sort of made you want to switch over to strength training as opposed to those group settings where a lot of it is get as many reps as you can for this amount of time?
I actually was started. I did both. I started with group classes, and at the gym, they said, you know, we want some people to do personal training as well. And I thought it would be a good way to apply what I was learning in school. And there was a market for it then, because it was a commercial gym. You know, the structure was different. We would get fed clients, and I said, you know, I enjoyed the one-on-one interactions. I enjoyed being there with one person and focusing my time on them and just taking them through a program, and then leading, you know, seeing results for them. So that's how I started. And then I just kind of built upon that over time. I really enjoy personal training.
And so how did that sort of manipulate the way that you trained yourself?
I would write out programs for myself, just like I would for my clients. But then, it was interesting, because you, both of you know, you get up early morning, you have clients before work, and then the mid-afternoon is your lull, and then that's when I would start to train myself. But after a while, I kind of, it takes a lot to train yourself when sometimes you want to just be a person who just, you know, want to just take a break and not train and not think about it. It's like, what do I do today? So I always needed a goal to work towards, which was, you know, kind of led me to this program. Because, I mean, Andrew, I met you, and it's very hard to develop trust in a program these days, especially because there's so much out there. And for someone like us who we're in the field, we kind of know what to look for, what to stay away from. But for the average person, you don't know, because if someone's promising you results and that's flashy, you're going to go towards it. And I don't blame them either. I'm picky when it comes to programs, and I really liked your program because it was common sense. It was like personal training, and this is how I would train myself. And it just took the guesswork out of it. And on days, I mean, Andrew knows this. He's seen my Instagram, and I'm going to the gym at like 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night, because after a long day, that's the only time I have. But if I were to do it for myself, I'd be like, okay, I got to go get it done. But here I have a sheet of paper with Bailey's like three sets, you know, so many number of reps. Let's just go get it done. I don't have to think about it. I just go execute it. And it's helped me because I've stuck to something, and I'm like seeing growth in terms of, you know, weight and things like that. It feels good.
Yeah.
So I like it, and I'm going to stick with it for as long as I can.
There's something embedded here that I think is worth, I want to ask a little deeper, but I'll use example. For anybody who's listening who knows who the liver king is, maybe a lot of the women are be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Lavanya's one. Yeah. So the liver king is this, I'm going to be unvarnished. He's grotesque looking. This grotesque, bearded, you can smell him through imagery. And that's just a really nasty indictment of him. But the whole controversy around the liver king is this guy had claimed to be natural, and you can eat like beef liver and bull testicles and be as jacked as this guy is, right? Clearly doesn't use sunscreen. He sort of like looks like reddish all of the time, right? Someone who's like always sunburned. And anyway, so people looking at this, and of course us in the industry are looking, is like, how could people be so stupid as to think this guy's not literally full of thousands of dollars worth of steroids all of the time? Now there's two things here. One is he eventually was outed for literally taking about $10,000 worth of steroids a month to look like this. But two, we forget what the everyday person knows and understands. I grew up in a generation that watched WWE wrestling. It was a big scandal when it came out that a lot of these wrestlers were on steroids. I was a big fan of baseball coming up through this big scandal that Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and all these guys were using steroids. And it's illustrative of just how a lot of the everyday people don't have the lattice work of knowledge to understand, okay, who's likely using steroids and who's not. And in some context, I don't give a shit. I don't care what Hollywood actors are doing. It. We grew up on Arnold Schwarzenegger. I loved Commando and Predator and that sort of era, that stuff. And I like that stuff a lot more than I like the emo Twilight type heroes of more recent times. That being said, how do we reach the person who doesn't know the difference? Like, how do we, like, as coaches, like, get past this elitist, oh, like, that's obvious, when it's not obvious to most people? Any thoughts on that whole discussion?
I would say it takes a lot of humility to relate to the average person like a human being and not like you are standing on some pedestal and you know something that's way more than them. Even if you do, when you're talking to somebody, again, don't talk to them, don't talk at them, talk to them and pull them in a discussion and be genuine about it without being, like elitist. And you, when someone says that they've been trying something instead of us poo-pooing it, because we know who the Liver King is, they don't know. They genuinely don't know. They think he's okay. Always communicate with like the best information that you have, and treat them as part of the journey. I would think when you talk to clients, when you talk to the average person, pull them into the discussion as opposed to telling them what to do. Because telling somebody what to do, it just never works out. They have to buy into it. They have to feel it, and it has to come from within. You know, for example, small things like working out regularly. Yeah, I only have time for once a week, half an hour. Okay, meet them there. Once a week, half an hour. I take XYZ supplements. Okay, here's the reason why you might want to think about these supplements, because have you tried getting it from food sources, for example? You know, if above and beyond that, if you feel like you need it, then okay, but try this first. It's probably going to be more useful for you and not, you know, end up costing you lots of money.
Yeah. And honestly, as a trainer, a lot of the answer is, oh, well, it depends, right? Because everyone's individual, but you're right. Meeting them where they're at is definitely important. Then they're not sort of guard up, oh, this person thinks I'm wrong, I'm going to have to defend myself. And then they're really not getting that knowledge that you're trying to give them. Mm-hmm. And then really you're both just, like you said, talking at each other instead of connecting and creating that relationship there.
Let's go a little further with this idea. What would you say to someone who comes to you and wants to try a popular fad diet?
So if this person is going to try a fad diet, my first starting point would be, there are different ways to get to your goal. Like, what's the goal? What is your reason for choosing this method? If it is something that they can do consistently and sustain it long past, you know, when they reach their goal, because once they reach a goal, guess what? Everyone wants to lose weight, for example, but it's harder to maintain that weight loss. So as long as they understand the negatives and the positives of that fad diet, if that's what they're going to be able to do happily, sure. But if it's one of those things where they cannot sort of find contentment or happiness or sustainability, then I would say try it for now. I don't want to discourage them, but also be aware that these are the consequences of following this approach. Because a diet is a temporary thing. I like to think of a diet as a noun, not a verb. Yeah. And a lot of people look at it as a verb. It's like, I need to diet. Okay, no, your diet consists of a whole bunch of foods that you are going to be eating to make you the healthiest person that you can. And as Dr. Friedhoff says, I think the happiest that you can. I forget the actual quote. But if it's bringing you happiness and you can sustain it, go for it. But also know the negatives of that. I'm not about to bash anybody's keto or gluten-free or paleo, because that's going to immediately put them against you. They're going to be like, you know. So for me, while it might not be the chosen method, I will do my best to arm them with science and good information so that they can make that decision at the end of the day.
I don't endorse any specific, quote, popular diet, but here's an interesting thought that I want to leave with people. The typical Western diet, in the way that we eat an overabundance of highly processed, high-calorie food, low protein, low vegetable intake, is a highly disordered and problematic, like, default setting that far too many people are living within. So when we look at the contrast, I mean, the wrong type of person gravitating towards a quick fix and thinking that, well, I'm going to be able to do keto forever and white knuckle it for 5 weeks until they finally break down, it's not the answer. But the default setting is highly disordered. So it's a tricky thing when you think about it.
It is. And, you know, if someone said they were coming to me and saying, I'm going to do keto, I will absolutely begin by telling them what the ketogenic diet's origins are. Absolutely. It was a medical thing and has somehow become this bad diet, which it was never intended to be. And now you have people capitalizing on. I saw the other day in the store a keto water, keto oatmeal, and I cringe every time I see the industry, you know, just take this and run with it, because there's money to be made and we're wasting and wasting and wasting our money and, you know, and being like swindled. But it worked for me. I am glad it worked for you. Let's talk about the rest of your life now.
Yeah, exactly.
What else you got, Bailey? I keep interrupting.
All the questions I had, for sure. This is awesome.
All right. Lavanya, from the perspective of, I mean, you're obviously doing our program and we're grateful you're in it. How valuable is it for you to have this stuff done for you? So that way, like, what does it free you up to do? What does that allow you to do with your life with having something structured like this?
It frees me up to not have to sit and write programs for myself and worry about what I'm going to do if I fall off the wagon or if I'm not able to do something. So I travel quite a bit in my life, in my personal life. My husband and I like to travel around the world. So one of the things that's given me is a lot of discipline, because even when I'm traveling and I come back, I hop right on the program, you know, and if I'm not able to do it on the road, I will modify it to the best of my ability. I love the modifications. I love the consistency. I love the discipline. And I love the fact that it gets me up in the morning. I'm like, I'm eager to do the workouts. I mean, I'm not even kidding. I'm like looking forward to it. I'm like, okay, upper body day one, day two, day three, day four. And it's super straightforward. And you know, the exercises are straightforward and there's no drama. It's just, here you go, get it done. And it's result oriented and I love it. And there's no pressure. There's no pressure. But when something's written down on paper and it's done in a very nice way, like this quick coach for the, is it the software, quick coach for the next round? It's really nice, very well laid out. So it frees me up to do all the things in life that I like to do with a little bit more strength in my muscles to be able to do those.
Like travel to Petra. Tell us about Petra.
I recently went to Jordan and I got back last week, and Petra was on my list. Andrew and I were talking about it ever since the Indiana Jones movie from like the, you know, 80s. And Petra was a nice long hike. It was, you know, we took the backdoor route to the monastery, which is like a 13-mile, you know, like a climb up and then climb down like 860 stone steps, uneven surfaces, rocks and everything. And I'm telling you, I genuinely feel like that the legwork that I've done in the last, you know, two rounds has made me much stronger to be able to tackle that and given me like the stamina and the energy to do these things. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. See the treasury and the monastery.
And for those who are not familiar, Petra is this just iconic thing. And you know what's weird is like my brain is like, which movie was it in? Was it in Raiders of the Lost Ark or was it in the Indiana Jones The Last Crusade? And I'm like, I'm blanking on that because it's been a while. But it's this, like you described, this monastery, but it's cut into a cliff, these stone pillars. And it's just so iconic and beautiful. And it was just really cool to see it on your Instagram, you visiting on that site.
It was awesome to be there. I'm sitting there going, this is like history. And we just like hiked up here. It was pretty cool.
Well, I love everything you shared there. We really appreciate that you came on. It's cool to see a coach who's living it, who is a great example of this stuff, and who understands the value of having, like, taking care of yourself and not putting yourself last. Because just as much as we'll tell parents and caregivers, a lot of times the coaches, we're kind of awful at doing what we're supposed to do for our own well-being because we care so much about our clients' well-being. So,
and because we are, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Everybody tuning in, please, thank you so much for continuing to be here. We're going to continue on. We have another one of our members next week already planned. And if you're new to this, please check out some of our other recent guests, some of our members. They've got some really crazy, really awesome stories. And you may want to stick around and subscribe. We'd be thrilled to continue to have you. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me or Bailey. And Lavanya, I mean, you are a coach. Where can they find you on social media if they want to go check out more what you're doing?
You can find me on Instagram. It's L-A-V-A-N-Y-A-K, Lavanya K. I'm also on Twitter. Twitter is probably one of the best places to reach me. L_Krishnan, K-R-I-S-H-N-A-N. I tweet a lot of stuff about public health and exercise science on Twitter. So, yeah.
Really important intersection of things because, you know, I try to avoid mostly talking about everything that went on in 2020 and 2021, because that stuff gets really contentious. But I think there was a period of time where there was a treatment where within the public health communication realm, whether the communication around the importance of exercise was not super well communicated. There's complex reasons for that. But I think we now know that one of the best ways to improve your odds of a good outcome, even in the face of whatever kind of health issues come your way, whether it's a virulent virus or whether it's, you know, metabolic health issues that can stem from, you know, years of inactivity, the answer is still the preventative medicine, the best tool we have. And this is quoting Peter Attia, is resistance training and cardiovascular training, improving your VO2 max, building and maintaining muscle mass, building and maintaining bone mineral density, maintaining grip strength, which is sort of a proxy, I think, for a lot of other things, but it's a very good indicator. And at the end of the day, yes, we know that not everybody has the same access, resources, and opportunity. It is still something that, for the most part, you can take control of. And so if there's someone in your life, because I think anybody listening self-selects to understand this, but if there's anybody in your life who you're trying to nudge, share this episode with them. We'd appreciate it. Lavanya, thank you so much.
Walk is really good. Walking is really good.
Walking's really good. Have you read The Comfort Crisis, Michael Easter?
Yes.
I really like that. He's a big push to popularize rucking. So that's just walking, hiking with weighted packs. And even I've been thinking about getting myself a weighted vest for something like that. So
Dad's been after me to put a weighted vest when I'm walking. I need to get one of those.
That's a cool idea.
And can I add one more thing? Sleep.
Absolutely.
You need to sleep better. You just need good sleep. Sleep, your next workout is just as good as how much rest you get. And I know it's very hard for a lot of people with families and children and work and everything pulling them apart. But if there's one thing that I would prioritize, it's sleep. If it means you need extra sleep and you can't get to the gym that morning, it's okay. Get the sleep and then do something else later on. You know, don't sacrifice your sleep.
I got to laugh at this. So, you know, I'm a Blue Jays fan. Okay. So this is a total side quest. But one of the Blue Jays pitcher, I think it's Yasiel Kikuchi. He had a really good year this year, but there was he's a starting pitcher. So he pitches once every five games. And he was in the news and saying that he had a cramp in his trap and he could only pitch five innings one game because he said he only got 11 hours sleep. I was like, what? And he normally apparently gets 14 hours sleep a night. I mean, that's an outlier. That's not normal, but that's what he claims. Seems to be working for the guy. It's pretty good. So anyway, I don't think everybody needs that much, but I suppose if you're paid over $10 million a year to pitch in Major League, and this is what you need to be good at what you do, guess what? I say, like, if I could sleep 14 hours a day and make that kind of money, I probably would take that job too. Sounds pretty good. Thank you again so much, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you.